This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we're focusing on the ever-changing treatment landscape for cancers of the hematological system. This series is supported by educational grants from Servier Pharmaceuticals LLC and Takeda, who have had no influence on the content or choice of faculty. If you'd like to check out any of the publications that we mention in this episode, there's references and links for these in the episode notes. We're your hosts, Hannah Wilgar
and Andre Grasser.
Over our last few episodes, we considered approaches to treating patients with acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or ALL. Today, we're changing tracks with our first episode exploring a different hematological malignancy, myelodysplastic syndrome, or MDS, starting with a discussion of current guideline best practice.
To answer our questions on this topic, we've invited Dr. Platzbecker to join us later in the episode. Dr. Platzbecker is a clinical director in the Hematology and Cellular Therapy Department at the University Hospital of Leipzig in Germany and co-author of the ESMO MDS guidelines. But first, we're going to spend a few minutes discussing the basics. If you're already familiar with MDS and the current guideline recommendation for its treatment, do feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 5-minute mark.
MDS is a rare blood disorder that stops a patient from producing enough healthy blood cells. According to Wells and colleagues in 2016, it most commonly affects the red blood cells, but it can also affect the white blood cells, platelets, or a combination of the three. The symptoms of the disorder depend on which of these blood cells are affected, and common symptoms include weakness and tiredness, breathlessness, frequent infections, or easy bruising and bleeding.
MDS develops when hematopoietic stem cells of the bone marrow mutate in the way that disrupts healthy blood cell development, not only within the mutated cells themselves, but also in the surrounding healthy tissue. In its most severe manifestations, that is, about a third of MDS cases, the abnormal cells acquire more mutations and develop into acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. And the overall 3-year survival rate for those diagnosed with MDS is only about 45%.
Treatment options are available for MDS once a diagnosis has been made. According to ESMO and NCCN guidelines, several investigations will help to establish an MDS diagnosis in patients presenting with cytopenia. These include peripheral and differential blood counts, cytomorphology of peripheral blood and bone marrow smears, and cytogenetics of bone marrow cells. Once diagnosed, MDS cases should be classified depending on the associated risk of developing AML, and this can be done using the International Prognostic Scoring System developed by Greenberg and colleagues in 2012. The patient-specific karyotype and cytogenetic makeup should also be recorded, as these can predict response with specific therapies.
For patients who are at a higher risk of developing AML, treatments should aim to modify the disease course whenever possible. For these patients, ESMO and NCCN guidelines stipulate that allogeneic stem cell therapy should be given first time to patients who are fit enough with an available stem cell donor. Though, whether these patients should be pretreated with chemotherapy or hypomethylating agents is a topic of debate. For those who are older, less fit, or lacking a suitable donor, these patients should be treated with hypomethylating agents such as azacitidine or with chemotherapy. Extremely frail patients should receive the best supportive care.
For lower-risk patients, MDS is less likely to be life-limiting, and so the main priority is not altering the progression of the disease itself, but rather improving the patient's quality of life by treating any symptomatic cytopenias, including thrombocytopenia, neutropenia, and most commonly, anemia.
For patients with symptomatic anemia, if the patient's cytogenic analysis revealed a 5q deletion, they should be treated with lenalidomide. For other patients, the first line of therapy should be erythropoiesis-stimulating agents, or ESAs, with or without granulocytes, colony-stimulating factors. Patients who do not respond to ESAs can be treated with hypomethylating agents such as azacitidine or lenalidomide. Antithymocyte globulin is another second-line option, but only for a small group of patients with specific clinical characteristics.
Another recommended treatment against anemia is luspatercept, which is a novel agent for patients with MDS with ringed sideroblasts who fail ESAs. As opposed to anemia, thrombocytopenia or neutropenia symptoms are usually moderate in lower-risk MDS patients, and treatment options are more limited. Azacitidine is recommended in both cases, but it is not universally approved, and antithymocyte globulin is recommended for patients that possess the required clinical characteristics. Additionally, for neutropenia, broad-spectrum antibiotics are recommended for short-term use, and granulocyte colony-stimulating factor may also be considered.
For thrombocytopenia, androgens and thrombopoietin receptor agonists were also recently added to the ESMO treatment algorithm. For most patients with both high and low risk MDS, they will eventually require best supportive care.
Often this involves red blood cell transfusions, particularly for patients refractory to therapeutic drugs. However, there is debate as to the deleterious effect of iron overload in MDS patients and as to whether or not iron chelation may be useful in these patients.
These ESMO and NCCS guidelines provide an excellent starting point for diagnosing and treating MDS patients. But how can clinicians make treatment decisions around debated topics? And how should response be measured when treatment goals vary by risk? To help us answer some of these questions, we've invited Dr. Platzbecker, Clinical Director in the Hematology and Cellular Therapy Department at the University Hospital Leipzig in Germany, and co-author of ESMO MDS Guidelines. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Platzbecker. So for our first question, what are your thoughts on debated topics in MDS treatment? For example, should high-risk patients eligible for halogenic stem cell therapy be pretreated with chemotherapy or hypomethylating agents? And when should red blood cell transfusions be used?
Yeah, thank you for this important question. I think some of the questions you are raising are not answered by randomized prospective clinical trials. So at the moment, and this is now related to the question with regards to high-risk MDS being eligible for allotransplant pre-treatment, yes or no, I think at the moment many of us would recommend azacitidine, so HMA-based therapies, to bridge for the time from diagnosis to allotransplant in higher-risk MDS patients. The use of HMA, on the other side, has some shortcomings, including neutropenic infections and also disease progression, which is not uncommon with this kind of treatment. So therefore, now some researchers and some clinicians, some transplant people and community actually is also using the upfront allotransplant, so meaning without any prior treatment, no HMA, no chemotherapy, which of course is only possible in case of the availability and the instant availability of a related or unrelated donor for a given patient. The third option we also have is intensive chemotherapy, and of course, intensive chemotherapy has a higher remission rate for these higher risk MDS patients compared to HMA-based therapies. On the other side, the toxicity is considered to be higher as well. So the optimal way of addressing this question in an individual patient is to include these patients into clinical trials. And there are a number of clinical trials now running worldwide, but also nationally, which try to address this topic, also by introducing novel intensive chemotherapy agents like liposomal daunorubicin and cytarabine. What about red blood cell transfusions? I think they should be always used when clinically needed, in especially higher risk MDS patients prior to transplantation. On the other side, we know that the side effects of red blood cell transfusions include primarily iron overload, and iron overload on the other side has been linked to a higher non-relapse mortality after transplantation. So therefore, restrict the use of red blood cell transfusions as much as you can, but of course, don't withheld them to patients in need of such a transfusion.
Perfect. Thank you for your answer. So for our second question, ESMO recently published new guidelines for MDS. What are some of the key changes that clinicians should be aware of?
Yeah, the ESMO guidelines, I think, are considered to be as comprehensive and as novel as possible. So I think we are all aware of the fact that guidelines, but also knowledge about a certain disease is changing sometimes every 4 to 6 weeks, dependent on some recent updates of clinical trials or novel diagnostic tools. So this is, I think, the prerequisite for the ESMO guideline, was to be as comprehensive and as novel as it is basically possible at the moment. And it does not only cover therapy, it also covers diagnostics and introduces also terms which are very important in the workup of patients with cytopenia. The terminology, for instance, CCAS, like clonal cytopenia of undetermined significance. So these are basically patients with a cytopenia not fulfilling the morphological criteria for MDS, but on the other side having or displaying clonal events, like molecular events, mutations commonly seen also in patients with myeloid neoplasm. So I think this is very important. Also during the workup of patients with cytopenia, and mainly with the suspicion of MDS. Then of course it covers also the staging and risk assessment of MDS, introducing something which I think we have used also in the last couple of years quite commonly, the IPSSR. And then with the treatment, I think there are some novel aspects of treatment, including the registration and the labeling of EPO, although an old drug in MDS, but it gained now the approval by the EMA a couple of years ago. And most importantly, also the introduction of luspatercept as a now novel and registered drug, mainly for patients with lower risk MDS and ring sideroblastic phenotype. So I think this is the idea. I think some of the content, of course, is not novel; it's just updated. But as I mentioned before, also some novel aspects were introduced.
That's great. Thank you for that answer. So for the next question, how should response to MDS be measured for both high and low risk patients?
Response criteria do exist for both subtypes of MDS, low and high risk, respectively. The response criteria are actually defined by the so-called IWG, the International Working Group for response criteria in MDS. There is a recent update, the 2018 response criteria, which addressed primarily some missing aspects, some missing key information in patients with lower risk MDS being red blood cell transfusion dependent. For the higher risk patients, the response criteria have not been recently updated. We still use the 2006 IWG criteria, but again, the response criteria are of course different between both high and low risk MDS, because in low risk MDS, the target of our interventions, of our therapeutic efforts, are primarily the level and the extent of cytopenia. So it's a quantitative assessment of less transfusions, higher hemoglobin level. And in patients with the higher risk MDS, it's more aimed at altering the natural course of the disease. So it's more an AML-based assessment, including CR, PR rate, like very commonly also used in AML patients.
That's wonderful. Thank you. So for our final question, how do you select the best therapeutic options for patients with symptomatic thrombocytopenia or neutropenia?
This is I think, a moving target and is not very well addressed by commonly available therapies. I think one has to differentiate here between higher risk and lower risk patients. So in higher risk MDS patients, thrombocytopenia, neutropenia, most of the case is rather a result of the suppression of the normal hematopoiesis by expanding blast cells. And therefore, the introduction of hypomethylating agents, chemotherapy, and also allotransplant may overcome this and may at the same time also improve thrombocytopenia and neutropenia. In lower risk MDS, the use of G-CSF is only recommended in patients with severe symptomatic neutropenia, fever, sepsis, and so on, although data are limited that this is of long-term beneficial effect. Thrombocytopenia, on the other side, in lower risk MDS patients has been addressed within a lot of clinical trials, including randomized studies with TPO receptor agonists. And the data, I think, clearly show that these kind of drugs are very active. Roughly 35 to 50% of the patients show an increment and an improvement of platelet counts, which can be sustainable not only a small but rather decent subset of patients. The challenge in the clinical routine is that these drugs are not registered for this indication, so it's an individual decision which has to be made on the patient, the patient characteristics, also the nature of the disease, and also maybe the symptoms the patient is displaying.
That's great. Thank you for joining us again, Dr. Platzbecker. So that brings us to the end of today's episode. To recap on the key points we discussed, ESMO provides comprehensive guidelines for the treatments of MDS, and these were recently updated with the latest clinical trial data and novel diagnostic tools. For higher-risk patients, therapeutic recommendations include allogeneic stem cell therapy, chemotherapy, or hypomethylating agents. For lower-risk patients, thrombopoietin receptor agonists can be active against thrombocytopenia. Options for symptomatic anemia include lenalidomide, ESAs, hypomethylating agents, or antithymocyte globulin. And there is limited evidence for granulocyte colony-stimulating factor in severe cases of neutropenia. Again, if you'd like to check out any of the publications that we've mentioned today, you'll find references for these in the episode notes. The next episode in our hematological cancer series will be out in 2 weeks' time, and we'll be talking about future options for patients with MDS. If you enjoyed today, please do subscribe and join us then. And if you have time to leave us a review, we'd love to hear your feedback. If you want more, you can also find free, accredited, continuing medical education modules on our website, onkip.com. And you can find a link to this in the episode notes, so please do check it out. If you're a Twitter fan, our handle is @onckip.